Many thanks to the choir. That was beautiful. Our reading this morning is called A Larger Tapestry of Meaning, and it's written by the Reverend David Blanchard. He says, "There is room on our path for any person who seeks a more complete understanding of what is true and good in life. The answers can't be found if you ask only men. They can't be found if you ask only Christians. They can't be found if you ask only gays or lesbians. They can't be found if you ask just yourself. The answers come from listening to people of great, great diversity and weaving their small truths into a larger tapestry of meaning." Here ends our reading. Good morning. It's so good to see you all this morning. Before I dive into my sermon, I just want to take a moment to just tell you what a great privilege and joy it is for me to be with you here this morning. And I want to thank Reverend Mark, who's not here. As Eric said, he'll be coming to my congregation in Akron in a couple of months, and we're certainly looking forward to that. I want to thank my colleagues Eric and Kathleen for welcoming me and giving me so much support. I told them earlier, I said, boy, when I'm leading worship in Akron, I'm doing all that stuff that they've been doing in the service. I don't get to just sit there and preach. So really appreciate them doing all the heavy lifting this morning. So, or as I like to say, making the trains run on time. So it's really great. I want to talk with you this morning for a few minutes about a path. What it means, I think, to weave that larger tapestry of meaning that David Blanchard talked about. What is a path to reaching that restoration that Marjorie Bowens Wheatley talked about? And I want to do that by sharing a story with you. A story from my own experience, a story that I think illustrates what it means to experience and then to be transformed by an encounter with difference and diversity. This story takes place a few years ago when I was preparing to become a Unitarian Universalist minister when I was still a student, and doing what's called my unit of CPE. The ministers in the room know what that is. That's clinical pastoral education. Basically a unit of chaplaincy in a hospital. This was a major hospital in the Boston area. My unit lasted for about eight of the most, some of the most intensive weeks I have ever experienced. and it was transformational. I want to tell you about one moment that was perhaps the most memorable and transformational of that entire time. Now, as a chaplain in a hospital, my main responsibility, I mean, there's a lot going on, but my main responsibility was to visit and talk with patients. When I would come into their room, I'd introduce myself. Hi, my name is Tim. I'm the chaplain on this floor. How are you doing today? Mostly I would listen as they shared their hopes or their fears, talked about their families and their faith. And sometimes I would offer or be asked to say a prayer. Now, on one particular morning, I think this was almost halfway through the 8 weeks. I believe it was a Tuesday. I received a request to come and pray with a patient named Esther. I'll call her Esther. Now, Esther was in her late 70s. She was a Baptist, and she was a recent immigrant from Haiti who didn't speak or understand English. But before I got to her room, I was told in the note that I had received with the request, I was told that actually one of the nurses on the floor who happened to be on duty that morning was also Haitian, and that she had very graciously offered to translate if I needed her. I said, I need her. As I made my way to Esther's room, I thought about my past experiences praying with patients. When I first started working as a student chaplain, I have to tell you, there was nothing that I feared more, that was more nerve-wracking for me, than being asked to pray. Prayer had never been part of my spiritual life, and the thought of praying in general, and especially trying to pray with patients who were of all kinds of different denominations and beliefs and theologies, many of which I was not that familiar with and oftentimes were radically different from my own Unitarian Universalist principles and values, those differences left me feeling not just uncertain, but I'll just say downright scared and anxious. That was the first couple of weeks. But then things got better. I started to grow more comfortable with prayer. I developed what I prided myself on thinking of as a prayer strategy, which I would use when I talked with a patient. And here's how it went. You see, as I listened to the patients share their thoughts and their feelings, I would begin to make little mental notes that I would then draw on later should prayer come up, should they ask me to pray, should it feel like it was something I should offer. And those notes were, you know, would contain things like what they might have said about their family, their feelings, or perhaps their faith. By lifting up and sometimes repeating the very words that I had heard them say, I hoped that my prayer would reflect what was in their hearts and in their minds. I have to say, I think my prayer strategy had strengths and weaknesses. The strength was this. In my encounter with patients, I really tried to focus on the individual in front of me, on their needs, what was in their hearts, rather than going in with preconceived ideas about, you know, I'm going to make sure I get my theology across, or I want to tell them about my doctrine. Of course, I was a UU, so I didn't really have a doctrine. The point is, I really tried to stay focused on the needs of the person in front of me. But here was the weak part of my prayer strategy. I think I got pretty obsessed with getting the words just right. I would listen and think, okay, they talked about this person and their family and this thing they're afraid of and this thing they're hoping for. And prayer for me became about like, you know, getting almost like getting an A on my prayer paper. You know, getting those words just right, getting the phrasing just right. It all was about getting it right and getting it correct. Now that morning, as I made my way to Esther's room, a little bit of that anxiety started to come back, because in the past couple of times I had been with a patient who did not speak English, the prayer strategy came apart at the seams. I had tried to use a translator or two before, and I had found it so hard to get the information, make those mental notes, to just be able to connect in a way that would enable me to get the prayer just right. In fact, in the two times that I can remember now before I went to visit Esther, I don't think in either one of those I ended up offering a prayer, because I just was feeling lost. I was just like, you know, I hope everything's good. Peace be with you. Have a nice day. That is not the way to get an A in chaplaincy, I can tell you that. Now, while when those two encounters happened where it didn't go so well, I, of course, rationalized it by saying, well, you know, it was a language issue. It was a language barrier. But you know what? I knew deep down inside there was more to it than that. You see, while I've always thought of myself as a good Unitarian Universalist, a tolerant and open-minded person, the truth of the matter is that encountering people who are different from me, people with different religious backgrounds or beliefs, different political inclinations, and so on, encountering people who are different has always left me feeling so uncertain. Uncertain not only about what to say or not to say, but also very uncertain, and I would even say shaky, about exploring and even discussing those differences. That's why I think it's fair to say that I have spent much of my life being tolerant. I do a pretty good job with tolerance of difference, but not such a good job with engaging it, learning from it, and perhaps even being transformed by it. Now, tolerance has long been celebrated as a core value in our Unitarian Universalist faith tradition. We tolerate those who are different rather than condemning or trying to convert them. That's good. In fact, one historian of the Unitarian side of our tradition once boiled down the history of Unitarianism to three key values: freedom, reason, and tolerance. But I have to say that for all of its strengths, I think the idea or the concept of tolerance needs to be replaced or perhaps re-examined. Let's think about tolerance for a moment. When we say we're tolerant of something or someone, what we're really saying is that although we recognize our differences, and it's okay for them to be different, we are ultimately in the right and have truth on our side. We will put up with difference, but I think with tolerance, we're not challenged to really make the effort to explore it and to acknowledge the possibility that we have something to learn from difference and diversity. The Reverend Nick Carter, who is the current president of the seminary I went to in the Boston area, Andover Newton, has this great definition of tolerance. Nick says, tolerance is a negative judgment wrapped up in avoidance. Tolerance is a negative judgment wrapped up in avoidance. It's in your order of service. You don't have to write it down, but you can if you want to. So, now, Nick goes on to say that tolerating something or someone, and I like this as well, he says, it's a kind of don't ask, don't tell approach to engaging with a stranger. I will do it my way. You can do it your way. And we will do everything in our power to avoid really talking or listening or appreciating one another. Okay, so if tolerance has outlived its usefulness, what do we replace it with? Well, I think Unitarian Universalism is on the right track in that we affirm in our principles acceptance of one another. I think of acceptance, which I think is a step in the right direction, I think of acceptance as a kind of warm-hearted tolerance. as not simply putting up with difference, but of welcoming it into our communities and into our lives. We Unitarian Universalists can and should be proud of our commitment to accepting one another, accepting those with different beliefs about theology, about religion, about spirituality, and acceptance of those who are so often rejected and scorned by other communities of faith. And I, of course, particularly have in mind our LGBTQ brothers and sisters and cousins and nephews who we have welcomed into our congregations, into the ministry, and into our lives. That's something for which we should be proud. And yet, acceptance is good, but by itself, I don't think acceptance ultimately gets us where we need to be. You see, although acceptance is warm-hearted and welcoming, I don't think it challenges us to really engage with difference, to listen and learn from another, and to open ourselves to the beauty and the transforming power of diversity. And here's the value. This is the fourth one I'd like to add to freedom, reason, and tolerance. If I could point to one thing that I think is missing, not only from our concepts of tolerance and acceptance, but also from our own Unitarian Universalist experience with diversity and difference, that one thing would have to be humility. Humility. You see, in the midst of our tolerance and even our acceptance of difference, what I think has been missing is the recognition that those who are different, they have something vital to offer us, something that we need in order to be whole and to make our journeys of the Spirit. What is that something? It's their experience. It's their special and unique truth, the truth that lives in their beliefs, in their experiences, and in their journeys. If we are to weave that larger tapestry of meaning that David Blanchard talks about, I think we have to open our hearts and our minds to not only those who are like us and with those with whom we agree, but also to those who are different and with whom we may share little in common. Now, that's an easy thing for me to say. It ain't easy to do. Opening our hearts and minds to diversity and difference is hard. It's challenging. And boy, did I learn it, how challenging it can be, that morning in the hospital. When I got to Esther's room, she and the nurse were waiting for me. After introducing myself, "Good morning, my name is Tim, I'm the chaplain on this floor," I began, as I always did, by asking Esther a few questions. "How are you today? Do you have family in the area? What? Tell me a little bit about your faith tradition, your spirituality." Now, the nurse translated my questions, and Esther did her best to answer them, but I could tell from their facial expressions that something was very, very wrong. They looked at one another as if they didn't understand what in the world I was doing. At one point, after I got the end of question 3 or 4, the nurse reminded me that Esther had requested that I pray for her, and that prayer was all that she needed from me. Well, needless to say, that piece of information really caught me off guard. I thought to myself, well, yeah, I'm following my prayer strategy. You know, I'm finding out some information, some basic details, so, you know, I can get those words, get the words of the prayer just right. So, having been, walking into that room and not really listening, what did I do? I kept going. I plunged ahead. So I said, "Okay, thanks for the reminder. So, Esther, tell me a little bit more about yourself." And I have to say, the longer I talked, the more confused and exasperated both the nurse and Esther became. Finally, I mean, it's almost like the nurse had one of those big hands that pulled me off. But finally, the nurse interrupted me pretty abruptly and said, "Look, all Esther wants is for you to pray for her. You don't need to know anything about her. You don't even need me to translate. Just pray and she will follow you." Follow me? I thought to myself, follow me where? I couldn't imagine what in the world the nurse was talking about. I mean, Esther and I were, we were separated by so many differences and so many barriers. I mean, I think about all the different about me and Esther: age, race, class, language, you know, nationality, religion, just about all of them I can think of. Esther and I, in that moment, were just about total strangers. I kind of paused for a long moment. I didn't know what to do. I was absolutely lost and clueless. So I just said to myself, just pray and she will follow you, okay? So I remember I was sitting there. Esther was, you know, kind of over here, and the nurse was right there. So I thought to myself, and luckily I didn't say this out loud, I thought, okay, fine. That might have been the best move I had made up to that point. I said, okay. So I closed my eyes, and I thought, okay, pray for her, she will follow me. Well, look, I know she's a Christian. I only know one Christian prayer by heart, the Lord's Prayer. So I thought, okay, I'll say that. I thought to myself, this is a complete waste of time. It's pointless. She won't know what I'm saying. I don't believe what I'm saying. That's okay. I've done that before. But the point was, I wasn't going to be able to close the gap between the two of us. So I went, okay, here goes. So I started out, closed my eyes. Our Father who art in heaven. And before I could get to the second line, something I never expected in a million years happened. Before I could say the second line, I heard back, repeated to me, "Our Father who art in heaven." I was surprised. It was Esther, of course, repeating back what I was saying. So then I said the second line, "Hallowed be thy name." And she, in a very soft voice, repeated back, "Hallowed be thy name." And that went on until we got to the end of the Lord's Prayer. That was something. I have to say that although I was the one who had supposedly come that morning to offer prayer and comfort, I got to tell you, in that moment, when I heard Esther's voice repeating back to me the words of that prayer, something happened to me that has forever changed the way I understand not only what it means to pray, but also what it means to be a spiritual being, and I think what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. You see, as Esther repeated back the words of the Lord's Prayer, in that moment, I got this feeling of incredibly deep connection. Connection to Esther, and connection, I have to say, to something that was holy and beautiful in that room in that moment. Esther taught me that prayer is not ultimately about saying the right thing or getting the words just right, but that instead prayer is about being deeply, deeply connected, and about being in the presence of something holy and beautiful. In fact, thanks to Esther, that's now how I've come to understand spirituality. For me, spirituality is deep connection. It's not really so much about belief. It's about deep connection to oneself, to others, and to the universe. And although I can point to many experiences and people who have shaped my understanding of spirituality, I know I wouldn't have come to this point in my own spiritual life if it hadn't been for that amazing moment with Esther, an extraordinarily wise and deeply spiritual person who was so very different from me and from whom I had so much to learn. That moment with Esther will forever be part of my larger tapestry of meaning, and I am so grateful and blessed for her presence in my spiritual life. And you know, I think that experience with Esther reveals that encountering difference and embracing diversity, man, is it hard. We can be clueless. I was the captain of being clueless in that moment. But you know what? If we can stay with it, if we can try to remain open, if we can find the courage and, yes, the humility to welcome, to listen, and to be open to difference, I think we will experience something holy and sacred. We'll find ourselves in sacred space, in a place in which we can truly listen, learn, and be transformed. So what I hope for Unitarian Universalism and what I hope for all of you is that we can commit ourselves, that we can seek, that we can strive to open our hearts and our minds and our spirits to the beauty and the wisdom of another, to the truths that live in the lives and the experiences of a whole range of people. Because when we do this, when we enter a place where difference is celebrated rather than simply tolerated, I believe with all my heart that we can weave that beautiful tapestry of meaning. A tapestry guiding us along a path to truth, a path of friendship, and a path of great, great love. Thank you so much for listening, and blessed be.